your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Robin. Welcome to another episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday night, July 27th, 2025, as we record this new episode. Tis the season for baseball podcasters worried that whatever episodes they are releasing to the wild still hold up in case of breaking news. Right before we recorded this episode, the Kansas City Royals, first reported by Jeff Passan at ESPN and later confirmed by Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, the Royals are signing starting pitcher Seth Lugo to a contract extension, so that's one fewer starting pitcher on the trade market. The MLB trade deadline is 5 p.m. Central Time on July 31st. What's the status on key White Sox trade assets? We'll break it down in this episode as we update the White Sox trade board one final time. We'll also play pick to click later in the show as we select which teams will make the deals to acquire players like Eugenio Suarez, Mitch Keller, Cedric Mullins, and old friend Dylan Cease. Plus, there's some White Sox minor league news as Jim Margulis visited with the Charlotte Knights this week as they were in Nashville, a couple of key promotions, and injury news update on Noah Schultz. The Chicago White Sox wrapped up their final Crosstown Classic series against the Chicago Cubs on Sunday. It was a wild series. The White Sox smash Shota Imanaga and Cubs pitching for 12 runs on Friday night, easily winning 12-5. Then they were silenced on Saturday for just one run in a 6-1 loss. But it got wild on Sunday. The White Sox committed three errors. I'm still trying to figure out what Lenin Sosa was thinking as he had a costly two plan on an infield fly rule. And key difference maker in the game was Colson Montgomery being called for fielder's interference on a botched rundown. That call gave the Cubs a 5-1 lead. And then Andrew Benintendi hit his second home run of the game, a three-run shot, to make it 5-4. So the botched rundown hurt extra for the White Sox. The White Sox are now 38-68 on the season. They are 6-3 post-All-Star break. But the story so far in the last nine games is about the offense and how they're averaging 7.3 runs per game since Pittsburgh. White Sox manager Will Venable is excited about the young players and how they are getting better.
It's really exciting, you know. Our coaching staff and our players obviously have been putting in a lot of work the entire year, and to see these guys as they've, some of them started in the minor leagues and then come up here, some that have started here and continue to develop. It's great to see, and I think we've been pleased with some of the development, even when it wasn't resulting in wins, and now that these guys have gotten the results that they deserve, it feels even better.
We spent quite a bit of time in our last couple of episodes about the White Sox success against the fastball. As a team, after the Cubs series, the White Sox are now batting .300 against fastballs with a .594 slugging percentage. Venable insists that production against fastballs is still a core focus.
Collectively, from day one, we've talked about fastball performance and along the way have tried different things and committed to different things individually and as a group. I just think over this last stretch, the combination of what these guys are doing every day with their training and their mindset is obviously producing good results. So it's always changing. It's, changes day to day. But what we've been doing, obviously, lately has worked out.
Venable is a first-time manager, is also navigating the trade rumors and helping some players prepare for that phone call if it does come.
It's on my mind only in the sense that, I know the impact that the trade deadline can have on individual players and just want to make sure that that's not a distraction. And so just want to communicate with players and make sure that they're in an okay spot. Outside of that, our focus is just, whatever we can do to win today. And knowing that, anything is possible, just like it is for any other team in the league.
One of those players in the trade block is Luis Robert Jr. He missed the first two games of the Cubs series because of a groin injury, but after initially not being in the Sunday lineup, Venable made a last-minute adjustment inserting Robert in.
The initial evaluation, you know, he came in feeling better, but still not in a spot where, you know, he could get out there in center field. And then, we wanted to keep him plugged in and give him the opportunity to run around more. And he did. And, you know, we talked about it. And, you know, he really talked his way into the lineup after that. And we agreed that, you know, maybe center field wasn't the best thing for him, but that we could utilize his bat and that he was good to go to DH. So, we ended up making the change. He's going to go out there and compete and play the right way. And if he's not able to do that, you know, we wouldn't have him out there. At the same time, I'm probably not going to ask him to steal third base. I think fair. But at the same time, you know, he's going to be out on a major league field and, running around, not to the degree we're used to, but, you know, he'll be out there. Taking all the information and making sure that we're, doing the right thing to balance, pushing him to be out there and supporting him to be out there, but also, you know, not putting him in harm's way. And I think, you take inputs from the player, you take inputs from the medical staff, and, you know, all together we make hopefully a sound decision.
Unfortunately, in the ninth inning, Robert took a 101-mile-per-hour fastball from Chicago Cubs closer Daniel Palencia in his right forearm. So if there was concern about Robert's lower half injury, it's another bruise to be concerned about before the trade deadline for Robert. Joining me to discuss the latest White Sox and MLB trade news is Sox Machine Speed Reporter James Feegan and Managing Editor Jim Margulis. And James and Jim, welcome. We just heard from Will Venable and his decision-making what happened pregame, James, to make that lineup swap, because originally Luis Robert wasn't going to be in the lineup, then he was in the lineup, and unfortunately in the ninth inning he gets hit by a pitch. What's the latest status on Luis Robert after Sunday's game?
He's still on the active roster. yeah, he was supposed to DH, and it seemed like opening up to maybe, you know, playing center field this week, but maybe DHing again. So they certainly have plenty of center fielders. But then he gets hit in the right forearm with Daniel Palencia fastball in the ninth inning. So he got x-rays for that, and he was still getting treatment post-game for a while. He was kind of set to talk to media post-game. Like, well, he was going to, like, have a media session once he returned to, like, being in the lineup. But then since that became like a last second decision for the new lineup, he was going to talk to the media post game. And then, of course, he gets hit by a pitch in the ninth inning. So as far as how Luis is feeling with the ultimate, the last wave of trade rumors and talks, we haven't talked to him in just a bit because all of this. But it seems like if this knocked him out for a game, it wouldn't be surprising. Daniel Palencia throws very hard. It didn't look pleasant. But obviously there's, front office would like him to play. They are on the impression that the way he's looked out the All-Star break can only help. They're trying to get the teams that are in to be a bit more in on him while, you know, continuously communicating, at least saying we'll pick up that $20 million option if you make us. So that at least indicates the pressure they're trying to exert here and why the next, you know, few days could be. I don't know how much he can, like, juice his value by coming back and hitting like three home runs in a three game series. Yeah. People all of a sudden think he's not a mercurial bat. I doubt it. But certainly any demonstration of he's healthy and good, I think the team would appreciate, but you're now asking him to kind of shake off two ouchies and get back into mashing all at once.
So James, to follow up our previous podcast episode with that fan question that we received, what will the White Sox do if they do not trade Luis Robert? All signs point to right now, and we'll talk about the odds for Luis Robert getting dealt in a moment, is either they trade him or they pick up the $20 million option, right?
That is their stance.
That's the White Sox stance. Okay.
The rubber has to meet the road there, right? And like, yes. If he comes down and does like 500 OPS for 2 months, does pulling the trigger on like a basically 1 year, $20 million prove it contract, does that sound like the sort of deals that the White Sox have been doing in free agency? Or we'll do in the next one? No, it doesn't really sound very much like them now, does it? So it's a stance. It can be a feeling. I don't think it'd be like, I don't think it's a Luis Robert pick up the option no matter what, like little index card is in Chris Getz's pocket or anything like that. I think it's more, this is their operating stance going forward.
Got it. Jim, I know, and we'll learn more from you from Nashville. You got a chance to see the Charlotte Knights. So you spent more time with the White Sox AAA affiliate than the White Sox and Cubs and watching from afar. But I'm sure you saw the highlights on Sunday. So Friday, great game, completely blowout Cubs pitching. The offense remains hot. Saturday was a close, tight game until the bullpen, Jordan Leisure, gave up two home runs. But on Sunday, when you see Lenin Sosa have a costly tube plan, and then what appeared to be a great defensive play by Edgar Caro to catch the runner off guard at first base with the back pick, but it's another botched rundown. And this time was it Ian Happ running to Colson Montgomery James in the third baseline?
Yes, and to clarify, Will Venable did say post-game it was two botched rundowns. It just simply happened within one play.
Yeah, sure. Two for one. Jim, what do you make of that? Because, again, it's just nine games of the after the All-Star break. But the first seven games, White Sox go 6-1. This looks like a completely different team. And then Sunday, it's like, oh, yeah, this is the 2025 White Sox. We've seen this before.
Well, I mean, it's regression, I would say, is the most, or I guess the simplest explanation for it. My operating theory for a while has been that they are a 54-win team. They lose two out of three. Before this like recent outburst where they won six out of seven, they were good for losing two out of three in a series, having one game where they looked like a pretty good team and one game where they looked out-talented and blown off the field, and then another game where they lost in the margins. And I think that's what we saw here against the Cubs. We got the sampler. So I think that's how I'm looking at it going forward. And I think, you know, could be even more so. You know, right now they're on pace for like 57, 58 wins. So they're playing a little bit ahead of it, thanks to that recent hot stretch they had. But as the trade deadline hits, as the players we presume to be leaving leave, I think that's probably what it's going to default to, is this losing two out of three because either they don't have the talent on a given day or they just get pressed into some, you know, tough situations or like situations where they crumble. And I think like Lenin Sosa, you know, like bless his heart, he's a little bit of a, kind of like Gavin Sheets being in the outfield. Like if he's in the outfield, then your roster is not what you want your roster to be. And I think Lenin Sosa is kind of like in the same situation. If he's playing, he hits well enough to always make himself an option. He's generally healthy enough to make himself available on a given day, but he's had enough of these moments to where you can't plan around him. Like, I think that's fair to say. Like, he's somebody, if he's your extra infielder, if he's somebody in AAA, you can call up, like, fine. You know, he can win you a game here and there. He'll also lose a game here and there, but there are worse players. And I think, like, having seen, like, Jake Amaya, you know, to start the season as, like, plan A for shortstop. Like, he's Sosa is a cut above like a Jake Amaya. And so he should have a career bouncing up and down, but like to have him be getting as much playing time as he has and just not being able to hide him on the field. Like for a while, like I was half joking and then kind of serious. Now back to half joking about him playing first base, because like the ball just involves him too much when he's at first base. Like he's, the ball goes to him, whether it's hit to him or not, when he plays first base. And so he can be in a situation where he's not standing on the base when he should be standing on the base to receive a throw. And that's what's tough about it. So like it's tricky just because like you want to, you know, early in a career, you want to give him some benefit of the doubt and say speed the game. You know, it's speeding up on him right now. It'll slow down. You know, we went through the conversation with Nick Madrigal. And I think with the Cubs, him playing third, he didn't make the mistakes in the field that he made at second base. Perhaps it's a case of like all the throws are going in one direction. I'm only, I can run to first base when I throw. I don't have to rush actions or make quick pivots or anything like that. But the game slowed down for him eventually to where like injuries were his biggest problem. With Sosa, it does seem like if he could somehow cut down on these lapses, maybe he could be a second division starter. But when you see him as a second division starter with the lapses he makes, they are, they add a certain je ne sais quoi of just how ugly a loss can be. And I think, you know, for a task that Will Venable has in terms of making your team look better, they're the kind of mistakes where your team looks bush league when he makes the mistakes he makes, like not realizing what the infield fly rule is or not standing on the bag as a first baseman.
Yeah. Did Venable address those points, James, in the post game?
Oh, about, you know, all the screw ups.
Yeah.
In very like
general,
no, like in specific, like that was wrong. This is why, straightforward fashion that it kind of diffuses, like follow-ups. So like the rundown, two rundowns where we didn't execute either of them. The first one, Vargy's got to do a better job of getting Horner going back to second. He pauses and said, like, I should say nice job on the back pick, but Vargy has to get him going. Then Sosa has to cut the distance. And obviously you can't have an obstruction call. We have to do a better job on the second rundown too. And when I followed up on the second rundown, like, is that about throw or, you know, where Montgomery is, it kind of said like it's more Montgomery is, like, ideally you get back to the bag and give yourself some room to work back towards the ball. Like, that seems like, just obviously he's been on the rundown on the third base line before, but it's easy to probably look at that and say like, this is a guy who hasn't had a ton of reps and starting a rundown at third base and having right. that instinctual feel of where he'll be. So, and the infield fly, little bit of a mental error there where he didn't see the call being made. But that's kind of an automatic one where you have to know the ball isn't out. He's got to do a better job on that. And he knows that. And we discussed it, like, says like, that was bad. This is why we talked about it. He knows that. And we talked about it. Like, you're kind of like, well, how did the talk go? I guess is like the next way to go.
Right.
He like, there have been other managers where it's more of a back and forth about establishing the agreed set of facts and then like what caused it and whether it needs to be addressed or whether it's always being addressed. Venable kind of like fills out the form for you and like asks you to sign it. Then you kind of feel like, well, what more should I do here? You've done everything. I guess I'll just let you on your way. So yes, he addressed it.
The thing about Lenine's toot plan, like, you play second base. That's a play that you are involved defensively. Like, how do we screw that up, Lenine?
I mean, don't give him the idea that he should start trying to pull dropping pop-up scams at second base.
How would you know?
Keep him on the standard operation.
How would you know he was trying something? The perfect crime.
Oh, man. Well, it was costly because Andrew Benintendi hit two homers, as I mentioned in the intro, on Sunday, the second being a three-run shot to make it a one-run game, and the White Sox were not able to find that additional run, so they lose another series to the Cubs. They finished 1-5 this season against the Chicago Cubs. The White Sox are still at home. They have a three-game series against the Philadelphia Phillies. We'll preview that series later in the show. But this week and the upcoming days, it's all about the MLB trade deadline. And as I mentioned in the intro, as we're recording this, I always get nervous about these podcast episodes because breaking news can happen. I am checking Twitter as we are recording this, so you may get a little bit of Wizard of Oz and see how the podcast magic happens. If breaking news does happen, we have to shift as far as our rundown and our talking points. Or I publish this and then everything completely changes, which is fantastic. But as we record this, the most recent news, Seth Lugo signing a contract extension with the Kansas City Royals. That's one fewer starting pitcher now available in the trade market. So at this moment, we are going to update the White Sox trade board. This helps us gauge on what are the possibilities of players being dealt from the Chicago White Sox in the upcoming days leading up to the MLB trade deadline. Again, that is Thursday, July 31st at 5 p.m. Central Time. We usually go live for the final hour. That might be something we do again if we have availability on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine or on our playback channel at playback.tv/SoxMachine that you guys can join us and we can all react to the breaking news as it comes down the pipe. and see how active the Chicago White Sox are. But after an excellent outing on Friday, that's something that I did not mention. Adrian Hauser went 6 2/3 scoreless innings against the Chicago Cubs before giving up a 3-run homer to old friend Reese McGuire. But Hauser looked good on Friday night. And when we do our trade board here, it's three levels. High, we're going to say that's a 75% chance or better this player gets traded. Medium odds, 50-50, a coin flip. Low, 25% chance or worse that this player gets traded. It's more likely we think that they're going to stay with the White Sox when the deadline comes. So starting with Adrian Hauser, the White Sox best trade asset at this moment. Jim, I'll start with you. Are you giving that high, medium, or low odds for Adrian Hauser to be dealt before Thursday?
This feels like a Paul McCartney song for the three of us. High, high, high.
It should be.
Yeah.
Have you heard differently, James?
I haven't. I'm embarrassingly not that familiar with this Paul McCartney song. But no, I would put him high as well. I don't think our podcast is going to get interrupted. They don't have like the big pieces that draw like this competitive bidding that goes early. I think they're expecting a lot of their options to be either like late supplemental ads or kind of like, hey, we want to add one more starter, but this is not our main target, or maybe what we got boxed out of someone we were pursuing and this is a good fallback. So I think Hauser is going to be a pretty good kind of secondary rotational add, like not a frontline starter, but sliding rotation. But I think he's going to be in that kind of second or third tier, depending on how many tiers you have, I guess, where it happens a little later. But I think he's clearly pitched well enough, and his contract situation is kind of obvious for it to happen.
And then, Jim, with the being high, is there any particular teams that you are thinking of could be a good fit for Adrian Hauser?
I mean, the Cubs were a popular, the Cubs are always a popular partner because of just proximity and lack of imagination. That it always starts with, oh, could the Cubs use them? If not, then, go to the 28 other teams. But I think in this case, like, the Cubs are emblematic of the kind of team that can use them, where they don't necessarily need him to start postseason games. If he looks like he's in that good of shape to do so at the end of the year, then so much the better. But for the time being, if you just need depth, if you need somebody can give you a chance to win on like the fourth or fifth day of your rotation, then I think he's somebody who adds wins like in a more than marginal fashion. Like, there might be a way to turn over a rotation spot where, going back to classic fifth starter hell during the early aughts White Sox, of just like, if they could use that kind of situation where your fifth starter feels like an automatic loss or an automatic bullpen day, or just scrambling to, oh, Adrian Hauser's here, he might be able to go six. Like, that might, there's one thing about how many wins above replacement he could add, but in terms of feeling for a team of just like, hey, we have a chance to win today versus, oh, I hope our bullpen doesn't get eradicated by this opener to long reliever game, I could see him being a shot in the arm.
I have the Cubs as well. I think the Cubs, after reading John Greenberg of The Athletic, his Friday night recap listing all the items that the Cubs need to add before the trade deadline, one, they're not going to be able to accomplish all of it. It's way too long of a list, but I do think that the Cubs are going to add two starting pitchers. I think they're going to want somebody that's more of a frontline starter, but I'm with you, Jim, that the Cubs, that's my prediction right now, that Adrian Hauser gets traded to the Chicago Cubs before the deadline as the second starting pitcher that they add to the rotation. Do you got any guesses, James? Do you want to make any guesses of where Adrian Hauser can go?
Huh. I hadn't thought about it other than away.
Well, no worries. No worries. Again, I've also pointed to Toronto, the Dodgers. There's plenty of teams. But yeah, Adrian Hauser, more than likely his last start with the White Sox was on Friday. That's a little teaser to an upcoming segment on the show. Next on the list, Mike Tauchman. He's not walking in his last seven games. He's got 13 strikeouts, but he does have 3 home runs, so he's flexing some power as of late. However, in his last 30 games, it's still a good slash line for Mike Tauchman. He's batting .292 with a .350 on base percentage and slugging .434. There is the concern of the hamstrings as well, if he can physically hold up. But the White Sox still have him play right field, but he's very tentative, still running the bases. James, I'll start with you. High, medium, or low odds that Mike Tauchman gets dealt?
I am going to go low. He has another year of control. They love him in the clubhouse. They don't think it's like this big haul for strong side of a platoon outfielder with mobility issues at the moment. They think he wants to stay, and like they value that, his reasons for it. So I think like they're not going to like turn down a trade for like a real, like, you know, 50 FB prospect for him, out of like some sort of commitment to like his clubhouse presence. But if it's like the general line of value for 34-year-old outfielder with his, you know, his skills but also his limitations, I think they'd just as soon pass and run him back for next year, in a similar role where you'd also once again be protected if he needs to be even more platoon oriented than he's, you know, or even less, like more defensively limited than he has been this year.
So with that insight that you provided, Tauchman's situation kind of sounds like with Robert, but the difference is Tauchman entering arbitration would get like what, $3-4 million next year instead of 20? Like, yeah, that's more palatable.
Be different neighborhoods.
Yeah. Yeah, much different. Okay, so I'm buying what James is selling, especially after James wrote about the right field situation on Sox Machine over the weekend, Jim. I was high in the past, but now I've dropped it to low as far as odds on Tauchman. How are you feeling about Tauchman and his odds of getting dealt before the deadline?
Yeah, I would have said medium just because of the way he was moving beforehand. But yeah, if there's a case where the White Sox just don't feel like there's a whole lot going on for him and they're going to trade 2 other outfielders already, it might be and they don't really have anybody waiting in the wings in Charlotte to really take over that. I guess Will Robertson is there. I guess he would be the most natural case of
try that again.
Yeah, you know, try it for real, try it in earnest for a couple weeks. Certainly look good in Charlotte. That's a tip to what I'll have to say later in that, like, well, he's doing what he needs to do in Charlotte to make himself interesting. But yeah, it's really these fringe quadruple A outfielders like Corey Jolks would be like one of your most productive nights. And the White Sox saw a fair amount of him last year. So if they do still want somebody they can put at the top of the order and not feel bad about it, not feel like they're overexposing somebody, and they want one player to have around to not need to sign 4 outfielders again, perhaps then he does stick around.
Okay, so we're all low on Mike Tauchman, and now it's more of a probability that he's with the White Sox in 2026, so you can include that in your offseason plan projects. The next guy, Luis Robert Jr. Now, before we give our odds, Bob Nightingale of USA Today in his Sunday column always, always has White Sox notes. And this was the note in Nightingale's report that the White Sox, in trade conversations with the New York Mets for Luis Robert, are asking for Mark Vientos, the third baseman from the New York Mets, in trade talks. I find this note, James, interesting because it's, here's our guy, not that long ago, had a great season, but is struggling, trading our guy for your guy who not recently had a great season last year, but is really struggling this year. Let's see if change of scenery helps both guys out.
I mean, you certainly can look at the White Sox current infield and be like, maybe we could add something to this mix that stabilizes it, or certainly watch the game on Sunday and be like, well, what if they just had a natural third baseman that they dropped in here and shifted the ground a little bit to the right side for you know, some of the prospects they've called up this year. So they have the at bats for it to explore it. They have the positional need. They can kind of know where they threw him, even whether it was either third or first currently. I'm kind of spent like, I don't know, a few minutes today researching like what's wrong with Vientos in any serious way. But as far as like the general thing they've targeted the last deadline and what would be a good use of their season, like post high prospects, especially bats, because they have a hard time accessing them in a major way, it would make sense for them. Would we see him bat 120 and inexplicably lose a lot of weight over the last 2 months? Hopefully not. But already looks a little bit like that guy in the first place and is in a similar place in his career. So maybe all's well that ends well.
Miguel Vargas 2.0. Jim, if that was the trade, let's say if that does come to fruition and Bob just has excellent insight. But then again, I do remember the Eduardo Escobar days not that long ago. But let's say this happens and it's a one for one type of trade. Robert for a player like Vientos. Is that satisfying from your perspective in a Luis Robert trade?
I don't think there's any satisfying Luis Robert trade at this point. I think it's all trying to establish, you know, we talked about it before that it always, I think every Robert trade since his big season a couple of years ago would feel like you're selling him for less than a dollar. Like, you know, whether it's 80 cents, whether it's 50 cents, 30 cents, et cetera. Like, I didn't buy that teams would necessarily give a haul for Robert after his big year, because like they'd want to see him do it again, make sure he could stay healthy. So they'd undersell it then. Then he didn't get to the deadline to back it up. And then like they couldn't trade him in the winter. And then like this price keeps going down, down, down. And so like, it's a matter of like trying to just sell while I can get something. And Vientos would be something. And you'd understand why they'd trade for him, but it also feel like if I'm over in the Mets and you don't need Robert to be a middle of the order hitter and you just need the defense and center fielder and like just a true center fielder, it's like, yeah, I'd make that deal. Like if Vientos is somebody who strikes out five times for every walk and his defense at third is shoddy at best, or like, you kind of, it seems like based on his grades, defensive run saved wise, pretty steady below average. Then I feel like both teams would be like, yeah, take our guy, yeah, the grass is greener type trade. And then, you know, perhaps you both teams get, you know, Mets get Robert, White Sox get Vientos, and like, oh yeah, I guess this is why they traded him. And, this is what we could get for him. So I think every trade is going to feel like that at this point, whether it's a ball lottery tickets or a post type prospect at the top. I will note that Vientos went to the same high school as White Sox legends Zach Collins and Adrian Nieto. So if you're looking for pedigree, you're not going to find it there.
Is that the plantation, yep, the American Plantation High School?
Yep.
I would also note that he's got a lot of service time or a lot of team control left. That seems like a lot for Robert, who could be between 2 months and 2 years in a way that is costly for either path.
But it's the Mets. Like, I still don't have a, it's hard to comprehend when Steve Cohen is owning that team, because they just operated a completely different manner than the Chicago White Sox do.
He also like outright tweets about how valuable players who are cross controlled are. So he's not unaware of it.
I get it, but he's also got Brett Beatty, like, right? Like, they can, I'm not sure. And he got
Jacob. They can spare him. I don't know if that's what they do it for, is what I'm saying.
For Luis Robert. Okay, right. I see. I see what you're saying. All right. So that's that one trade gossip. We'll see if it comes to fruition. So I'll start here. As far as the trade odds for Luis Robert, I'm high. I'm with James. I think Robert has to be, not if, has to be dealt before the deadline. Because I am not convinced, Jim, that Jerry Reinsdorf is going to approve a $20 million club option pickup for Luis Robert in 2026. That's just my stance. So how about you, Jim? High, medium, or low for Luis Robert getting dealt before the deadline?
I'd say it's like a hold your nose high and that they're just dealing for what they can get. You know, under the theory that they dealt Eloy Jimenez for something, it's going to be along the same lines of they can get something for him. Just a matter of like whether it'll feel good. But the one thing I'm thinking about with Robert, like in this scenario where they try to keep him, would be, you know, the AJ Pollock saga or the Craig Kimbrell saga, sorry, of just like picking up an option and then figuring like, oh, a team will trade for him. He's Craig Kimbrell. Why would no team want to acquire a future Hall of Fame closer? And I say that in quotes because I don't think Kimbrell should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think Billy Wagner should be in the Hall of Fame, but that's
Jim hates relievers.
Yeah. Well, no, guys who throw a few.
And another thing.
Yeah, fewer than 1,000 innings is my being in the Hall of Fame with fewer than 1,000 innings. That's my, what grinds my gears. But yeah, I think, you know, having a situation blow up on the White Sox before to where like they just sat on two closers for an entire winter and it kind of hamstrung everything they're trying to do. And then they finally dealt Kimbrell for what they thought was gonna be positive, and then Pollock just kind of got hurt early and was mostly healthy, but kind of seemed disengaged or just like not part of it. I wouldn't say he was from a distance, wasn't a bad presence, but also somebody just like he opted out when he could have made more money with the White Sox. I think I took it as like he doesn't want to be here. Like there are places I'd rather be. We'll put it that way. And so having that recent experience in mind, I could see them like holding on to him. He has a couple months. Maybe they try again with throwing in money to a wider pool of teams that might be interested. But if he has a terrible or like a up and down 2 months and the White Sox are picking up to trade him, I think it'd be the same thing, but probably worse in a way, because like it would be for that equally expensive change of scenery guy or a team that somebody else doesn't need. And that's not what the White Sox want at this point.
So James, I'm going to put you down for high. Unless your opinion has changed, you get a text message recently.
I'll say mid to high, if only because like I've,
if he's hurt, I guess.
Heard them posture. If he's hurt, there's uncertainty around it. It's a difficult contract to offload. I also just am always wary of like saying someone has to be dealt because that implies like consequences if they're not, and like I don't know if like we can get law enforcement involved or like prosecution, but like if there's no teeth and there are has to, like you can I don't, unless you can chain yourself to the front office in some way or hunger strike, I don't know, like I don't know if we can force this to get done.
I was thinking about like the Jesse Crane trade of just when he was hurt with the shoulder issue and they traded him, and with like a stipulation of if he can appear in so many games, you get to select from this tier of players. If he, this, you know, this level of production we get from him, you can select from the second tier. If he doesn't play, you get these guys. And I wonder if like they can structure something similar to Robert, just like if he has another 38 home run look to him, like a MVP, you can have a top 100 prospect. And if he keeps straining his groin every other day, you get nothing. And just be the ultimate player to be named later. But that's, I guess I should say like high if he's healthy, high if he's able to play in consecutive games without incident. But I guess, yeah, medium to be like if, you know, his body betrays him.
That would be, I would, you know what? I want that to happen, Jim. I want Luis Robert to be traded at like 4:55 for players to be named later, just to see what the reaction would be for White Sox fans.
I imagine you have to be like on the, I think Crane was on the injured list when he was traded, and that's why they were able to have that language first. So if the White Sox place him on the injured list, maybe that's a prelude to a very convoluted deal.
I mean, if they put him on the injury list, if Robert is not traded again, I am just, I don't know. I'm not confident. I'm not confident that option's getting picked up. I would be surprised. And I don't know if that's the best if that's the best way to spend $20 million going to 2026. I don't know. You might be playing the same game again. Like you just mentioned the Craig Kimbrell option pickup, Jim. So you pick up that option and what? You spend all offseason trying to dump it?
Like, yeah.
It's just, you're in the same position and taking whatever you can get before spring training starts or opening day. I don't know. I guess
I think you'd have to try to build back the value again, frankly.
But how can you if
you'd
he
have to play well?
Hurt?
You're not going to get like a buy low on a $20 million option.
Unless they throw in a ton of money, like pick up a $20 million option and then like send $13 million with it or something like that, just to try to buy a prospect essentially.
I guess I'm just trying to envision what is that sales pitch from Chris Getz to Jerry Reinsdorf of, well, I couldn't trade him. So, boss, can you pick up this option so I can kick the can down the road a little later? see if I can deal him again in the GM meetings, winter meetings,
Justin Ishbia,
training.
Capital infusion.
Good Lord. Oh, I'm sticking to my guns here. Robert's getting traded in a way he's got to get traded because I'm not buying Reinsdorf's picking up that option. Someone who has pitched well the last couple of outings for the White Sox, Aaron Civale. So, Jim, high, medium, or low, Aaron Civale getting dealt before Thursday?
I'm going to say medium just because he could be, you know, like the tier below Hauser. I would say, like, if Hauser's second tier, I'd say Savali's third tier in terms of.
That's fair.
Yeah, you wouldn't think you'd ever start a postseason game, you kind of be more of a long reliever. Like, you wouldn't have him start. Whereas Hauser, in the form he's been showing, maybe he steals a game three or like a game four for a team that feels like we have a backup plan if it doesn't go well early. But he's been throwing well, so let's ride with him. The kind of renaissance he's had, the fact that he's been traded before, that's something that kind of goes to my thinking is, have teams wanted him at the deadline before? And they have. So I guess I could see the same thing of just like, well, every team could use a better fifth starter, basically, and he would fit that bill.
James, how about you? High, medium, or low for Aaron Civale getting dealt?
I would say medium because he fits the bill, and you'd think it does seem like there's a supply of people on his tier a bit, not, you know, frontline starters, but only medium and leaning towards low because I just haven't heard anything about it in a way that makes it sound like neither me nor like any reports of like, not that down that level is there like a ton of like, what's it? There's not a ton of like in front of reporting those, that level of deals. It's more like when it happens. But it just hasn't had a ton of smoke behind it. So it certainly could, because he's a pending free agent. All he can do is, you know, eat innings for them down the stretch, really. And it wasn't like, he certainly looks good now, but it wasn't like instant turnkey where they gave him like a new pitch and like he's dominated and like there's some sort of, man, this is clicking so well, why do we break it up? Level dynamic to it. And even Hauser, it seems like his mechanical changes he made over the offseason are why things are working now more than like something that happened when he came to the White Sox. He actually kind of walked me through like why he had two weird one third of an inning outings in AAA that spiked his ERA. And yeah, he doesn't think he suddenly locked in the gear here. He kind of was good. So all is to say, I don't know. There could be a Civale trade. It makes sense, but it doesn't seem to have like a ton of whispers around it right now. So I'd stick with medium.
Got it. All right. So let's go to Austin Slater. High, medium, or low? I'm going to go medium for Austin Slater. I feel like, Jim, he's that 26 guy. You got one job, Austin. You're going to pinch hit during the postseason when there's a lefty reliever coming in the seventh inning. That's your job. So I'm going to go medium for Austin Slater.
I'm going to say high just because... Okay. He, again, if you go to have teams wanted him at the deadline before, he was traded last July twice when he was bad. And this time he's good, or at least doing what he should be doing. I think I saw Mike Petriello talking about like the tweeting or skeeting about like Blue Sky about how they just need like a right-handed outfielder, any kind of right-handed outfielder, like Austin Slater is any kind of right-handed outfielder. So I think teams that mode of just, we need a complimentary bat to where like a left-handed reliever can't cut through the heart of our lineup or the bottom of our lineup in a postseason game, and that be like the reason why we lost in four. Like, I think that's probably the team that can pick him up.
James, high, medium, or low for Austin Slater?
I go high. The team at least thinks there's going to be a market for him. I don't know. Brandon Guyer made a living doing this. Why can't he? He's been Austin Slater. He's got a 154 WRC plus, or at least he does, did coming in the Sunday against left-handed pitching. He has had a defined role for a bit. He did hurt himself in very unique and strange older player fashion early this year, but hasn't had any ill effects. Maybe you can't like really sell him as a center fielder post like Terry's meniscus midseason. But I think I think it's a standard issue. It's a playoff caliber fourth outfielder. Whether it's, you know, don't let the lefty reliever, or if they're going to use an opener, we can throw Austin Slater in the top three, which the Sox have done, or, you know, just somebody who kind of sprinkles in the lineup in some way if there's a left-handed starter in a postseason series and just, you know, can be swapped out without any conscience. And he's very used to the kind of limited role he has to do, where he's even doing it on the worst team in the AL, and it's not really interrupting his operations in any significant way. So it's a salary super low. So that's another thing that makes adding him like basically of no consequence. And I think even there's like a sense with like the team, like he came in, he did his job. Let's do right by him. If there's an offer, let's set him up well to, you know, play for a contender. You're certainly not teaming with good outfielders, because if you did, you'd be a different team. But whereas like pulling Tauchman out of this lineup right now would clearly be deeply felt. Couldn't just make it all up by just playing Brooks Baldwin all the time. I think with Slater, one, Michael A. Taylor's been defending like more versatile defense wise, and I think has been holding up. It'd be a watered down version of what Slater's doing against righties for sure, but I don't think you'd mind putting him in there in the back in the lineup with the idea that he can run into and deliver some extra base pop against righties, and you could play Baldwin more. It's a smaller role where I don't think like they feel like they're gumming up their operation in some big way by pulling him out of it. So I think it's not going to be an exciting move. It probably won't be a move much for the deadline, but I think it's really easy for it to happen. And everyone involved is kind of willing, it seems.
So you mentioned Michael A. Taylor. With him being a quick follow-up, James, is he in the same spot as Austin Slater? Like, would you say he's got high odds getting dealt?
I haven't heard about him talked the same way, and obviously the bat isn't as, like, plug-and-play. I don't think, like, he's really respected in that clubhouse. Like, I know we can say that about a lot of guys, but, like, I don't know. They made shirts for him, and they all wear them around. Like he's a wizened player. Like, he hit his 10 years of service time. Like, he's a very even keel dude. But like, it's also just not as easy of like a quick marketable skill. Like, it's good center field defense. It's not necessarily like play it over your starting center fielder. Like, it's a bit more of a fringe role that he would have than Slater, who I think like is a weapon against left-handed pitching. Whereas this is like a good glove who you can put in against left-handed pitching, but maybe it looks a little bit like a weak point to be a starter in a playoff lineup against a lefty. Whereas I think Slater, you're kind of happy to put that in.
Got it. I'll put you down for medium.
Yeah. Taylor's sprint speed is down too. Like, he's not as effective on the base paths as he was. So I think like in terms of like pinch running value, he might've had that going for him. Like, remember when the White Sox traded for Jerod Dyson, of just the defense and speed, like provides defense, but in terms of hitting lefties or like being somebody can steal a base for you in a pinch, like probably not going to do that. So it would seem like his role is even more limited. Whereas like Slater seems like, not necessarily terms of disposition, like I can't speak to that, but in terms of like understanding his role, seems like more of a happy warrior type of just like, you're playing against the lefty, got it. You're sitting against the righty, got it. You're being pinch hit for, got it. Like, you just, he understands what he's doing.
You had to bring up the Dyson trade. Out of all the deals and all the moves they could have made in 2020.
Rick Renteria is
crying somewhere.
Yeah, he senses something and his fists have clenched.
Squeezing through an avocado.
Okay, let's move over to the relievers for the White Sox. We're expecting some movement when it comes to contenders just wanting to add bullpen arms. James mentioned this in our previous podcast episode. Steven Wilson is getting some interest, even though maybe he hasn't been all that great. But as James mentioned in our previous podcast episode, teams are looking to add guys in case they need that fifth inning, sixth inning transition. So I'm putting Steven Wilson high. I'm going to say there's a better than 75% chance he gets dealt before the deadline. How are you feeling about Steven Wilson getting dealt, Jim?
Low. Because I'm skeptical on Steven Wilson. One, because like I've been skeptical about him all year in terms of just watching him and, you know, seeing the big ERA to FIP disparity and being like, how does he keep getting away with this? He was DFA'd once and the league didn't want him. So there's that. Also, like when you look at his recent performance, there is one stretch where he pitched once over 2 weeks and there was the All-Star break in there. So that absorbed some days. So that's one reason why he didn't pitch like 4 days that the league didn't happen. But since then, like he's given up a couple runs in three of his five outings. So I just wonder if like he's on operating and top form and the league might be sensing that. So I would say low.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Jordan Leisure, we could both agree low, Jim. Cause I think you highlighted his, what is it? Win probability added in the group chat.
Yeah. It's now the second worst in baseball. which is weird.
Poor
like,
guy.
Well, I mean, it's what's weird is like, first guy who came to mind was Jose Ruiz in terms of just Peter Principle of like Ruiz looks great in a low leverage situation. Start putting him in a medium leverage and you're asking for trouble, high leverage, like, nope. Stop doing that. And when you looked at like Ruiz's baseball reference page, you looked at his splits, low, medium, high. It was very much that of like low, great, medium, nah, high, awful. And when you look at Leisure's, like it doesn't really fit neatly. It's not like one of those tri-colored Italian cookies of just like, you know, neat lines drawn exactly, you know, how you're supposed to use them. Like he's kind of best in terms of OPS allowed and high leverage. But I think it might be because the blowups are so spectacular. I wonder if it's just like a case of like, whoa, that situation got away from me. And all of a sudden your high leverage is low leverage and vice versa. Or you entered in low leverage. Now it's high leverage because you the game got tight on you to where like, you know, he's just making a mess of things. But yeah, right now, like when you kind of like the only place it shows in his baseball reference page is the margin in the game. And the only one where he's allowing like a not terrible OPS is when it's a four runs or more of a margin. So I think like that's mainly how it shows, but yeah, he's made a mess of just the kind of traditional markers of, you know, when's this reliever good? Because it's all like all over the place, unless you've watched him and then you have a sense of like, oh, he's in a close game. And like, I guess it shows up in his blown saves and his, you know, amount of reliever losses taken. He's got six losses on the season, four blown saves when he's not asked to save that many games. So I guess it shows up there in terms of somebody who lets close games take a wrong turn.
Any chance Wilson or Leisure could be dealt, James?
I mean, I'm not going to go above medium on any Sox reliever because I just don't have that sort of like quality outside of Grant Taylor, who I don't want to trade, but are being asked about. There have been check-ins on both. I would lean like Leisure, you would think low, but he also has like a level of like fastball velocity and like spin talent where if like a team had like was armed with a specific tweak, like we're gonna have you throw sinkers out of that high slot or we're gonna do something to cut it or you know some idea for him or some different like changeup he could throw, you could see maybe like an idea of like he'll take off and he won't cost very much sort of scheme. But yeah, obviously they've both been shaky of recent in a way that they're already on like the very fringy line of like, hey, we just need to add another, like, we're not going to top load and push everyone down, but we're going to deepen out our bullpen by adding another sixth, seventh inning guy. And then they have weeks where they don't really look like they're ready for that. It looks like that's happening right now, right before the deadline. So I want, if there was an option that was like in the 40 or the 30%, I'd pick that, but let's just say
Okay.
medium, so I'm different.
Yeah, so teams covet velocity. Velocity is king in the postseason because we also talk about the home run power and how big of an advantage that is during the playoffs. So I could understand, I could see a scenario that Wilson and Leisure get traded because of velocity. I just caution whoever trades for these guys. Grant Taylor, though, getting phone calls and trades, James, is a bit wild. I could understand if Chris Getz is being, caught off a little off guard. Someone's calling me, hey, is Grant Taylor available? No, we just called him up. Like, we like him. Why
I
would we
mean, I
trade him
used to
now?
watch like them play or their stuff and be like, hey, can we get the, what's the deal? What's the price on the guy with the awesome stuff? That seems of interest to us. I think it's
Do the conversations with the A's go sideways? Is Mason Miller still commanding a high price tag?
like, obviously, his numbers are lagging behind, and I think he went back up over four ERA because of how, corkscrew double on Sunday. But I think there's a pretty significant gap in like the quality of his stuff and like pretty much of his colleagues in the bullpen. That's shown in like the leverage they pitch in. So, it's hard to imagine. Unless like it's almost like you have to check to see if the Sox are actually kind of out on him and like, hey, they moved him to a bullpen right away. Like maybe they don't really see a big ceiling here, which I think the Sox, while even pushing him to a bullpen role, I think if you talk to their pitch dev people, that's not, they view him as still kind of a special prospect in a way. It's not really easy to see like how his current path is going to lead him to special production, but it doesn't make you feel like this is like a starter they're giving up on and thus is available. So I'd put it low because there's not low, very low to go.
I have low, not happening. That's kind of my range right now, for Grant Taylor. Any names that I missed running down? We went through a lot of guys again, Leisure, Wilson, Taylor, I guess anyone else from the White Sox bullpen, Slater, Savali, Robert, Talkman, and Hauser.
I had like a scout reach out asking for like background info on like Cam Boozer and talking to other writers. Like they had also heard people asking about Boozer, but that
Is
would
he
be like
healthy?
he's in AAA. Like he got activated out the IL. But that would be like I have to imagine that'd be like a cash considerations deal because it'd be pure like, hey, this guy throws hard and he's been good in the past and we think we can get it back working. But obviously, like as far as like value right now, it'd be kind of just dumping him. So it'd be like a trade the way like the Tristan Gray trade is a trade, where at this point, like not that Boozer couldn't be good again. He was obviously good last year, but at this point, I don't think it's a, when people say trade deadline, I don't think like that's
Altavilla.
the level of deal. I one, he's kind of a known commodity. And the one thing that kind of stepped forward could be control, and there were scouts at this series, and probably the one thing that he probably put red X's on for how he's performed this year was control. And yeah, I think for teams that have seen him walk the house before, having a relapse at this stage probably peters out what would be left of that flame.
Tyler Alexander might be like, that's doing well. I'm just in terms of guys the White Sox aren't attached to. They're just kind of
Clearly
last
useful,
in,
but
first out type rationale.
who's going to do the emergency like 5 innings when Hauser's like traded an hour before his scheduled start on Wednesday if Tyler Alexander's gone?
Well, good point.
The other Tyler.
Gilbert, yes, he's still on the team. All right. Well, that's the White Sox trade board. Again, any breaking news that happens for the White Sox trades, we'll be covering on SoxMachine.com. We'll have emergency podcasts, so we're going to be busy these next few days. Let us know on your guys' odds in the comment section at SoxMachine.com or hit us up on social media, high, medium, or low on some of the key players for the White Sox prior to the deadline. Lightning round, our picks to click. So zooming out and take a look around Major League Baseball, the top names that can be dealt before Thursday. And Jim, the top name, it appears to be, is Eugenio Suarez right now of the Arizona Diamondbacks at third base. The Diamondbacks are just having the Kmart blue light special going on right now. Looks like they're going to be the biggest seller prior to the deadline. Suarez, where do you think he could end up?
Yankees suddenly have a need for a big bat. They could use third base, but also just with Aaron Judge kind of being iffy right now, they could probably use that kind of impact.
Yeah, but what would they do? Is who's going to play right field? I mean, can Stanton throw a ball? I know he's hitting. I just don't know his health, like if he could actually throw. And they just got Ahmed Rosario. The Yankees are weird to me at this point.
Rosario, I forgot about the Rosario, like kind of maybe taking up that infield spot. But yeah, it just strikes me as they might need some power insurance.
Yeah, that is a good point. We'll see how long Aaron Judge is going to be out. James, you got a pick for Suarez?
For where he'll go. Seattle, I guess.
What a trade deadline that would be for Seattle to get Naylor and Suarez.
Like the Yankees just traded for Ryan McMahon.
McMahon. That's never mind. So let me take. I forgot the McMahon trade. That was while I was in Nashville. I think I saw that and then immediately put it out of my mind as I was watching Jesse Schulten's pitch or something like that. But yeah, so Ryan McMahon. Never mind. They'd sell their third base gap. So yeah, I would say. Yeah, it depends on how much they, you know, with Jerry DePoto, like he adds a lot, but he also like. He's shown the ability to be complacent in terms of, we're good enough. Let's see how it goes. So I wonder if they would have the ability or wherewithal to add two corner infielders instead of one and settle for that.
Tigers would be fun, but sound like they're being conservative. If they're dead set on like winning and they're not like afraid to block guys who have been struggling, the Rangers.
Whoa. Okay, that'd be kind of fun. That's a fun one.
Seem like they're pushing in. Burgers, Josh Young have all had their issues. They have a lot of like weird cornery bats, as someone who wrote up their system weeks back, but they also seem like the sort of group that would be like, hell, just throw another one. Let's make it work.
Yeah.
They've certainly been aggressive at the past. When we didn't expect him to.
Because of the contract and that he's a pending free agent, I have the Milwaukee Brewers. This fits right into the Brewers spending. So let's do it, Brew Crew. Let's get interesting. Add some heat to the Cubs and the other teams in the National League. Merrill Kelly, starting pitcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I understand Arizona dumping as far as the position players, but there's a part of me, James, that thinks that Arizona is going to hold on to all their starting pitchers and not trade any before the deadline. So with Merrill Kelly, I'm going to say he stays in Arizona, but do you feel differently?
I mean, it sounded like from, I want to say Ken Rosenthal's reporting, like it was either him or what's his face? Gallen. But, you know, they started dealing Naylor pretty early. It seems like, you know, Suarez is an obvious one that has to go. I think why not go? They're very against this as an organization, but especially with like neither one necessarily like pitching super well. I don't know what's the odd, well, worst part of like going both. I certainly think he's older and maybe a little bit more likely to take the QO than Gallen, so I would lean, say, trade Kelly and QO Gallen, who's probably going to look to get like a multi-year contract regardless. Could be the way they go, so I'd say he goes.
Okay. Jim, do you got a team for Merrill Kelly?
I think like the Blue Jays need a starter.
They do.
So they really Hauser could also make sense for them in a way, like if they're just looking for starters to help not have a rotation cave in on them. I think like they fit that bill.
Mitch Keller. So this is the big headline that I have for the Cubs. I think the Cubs are going to get Mitch Keller and then they'll get Adrian Hauser. And that's how they'll shore up their starting rotation. James, you got a good feeling on Keller as far as where he could possibly go?
I just cover the White Sox. I don't know. Sure. Like, yeah, I have no idea where Mitch Keller is going.
All right, fine. You got Sandy Alcantara. I'm going to go with the Dodgers. That feels like a very Dodgers move. Get somebody that often injured, but high potential, kind of like the Tyler Glasnow. For Luis Robert, center field, I think the Mets and Phillies are going to both add center fielders, Jim. I think the Mets are going to trade for Luis Robert. That will be my guess where Robert ends up before Thursday. The counter move for the Phillies, Cedric Mullins. Like, I think the Orioles are going to trade Mullins, and that makes that race even more interesting on how they both address center field, with the Mets getting Robert and the Phillies getting Mullins. You got a feel on, you got a guess for Cedric Mullins where he could end up, Jim?
Well, I'm kind of thinking along the lines of, like, I've had Robert not going to the Dodgers, but thinking like the Dodgers be a very, it'd be a very Dodger move to like use their clout to get Luis Robert on it. Let's see if we can either get a big bounce back, or, you know, if we have to cover his buyout, big deal, we're the Dodgers. And also, like, if the Padres have been sniffing around Robert, like, it's a blocking move to perhaps like demoralize a divisional opponent, or, you know, have them go to a plan B if they thought like they could get Robert for cheap and get that kind of upside play. So along the same lines, like, you know, they're kind of both in the market for an outfielder. So I would say, you know, the East could use it. The West could use an outfielder.
Yeah.
So I think those are the two divisions I could see Mullins going to.
Got it. And then old friend, Dylan Cease, just for chaos reasons, Boston. I think San Diego and Boston's going to make a head-scratching trade before the deadline. And why not bring the band back together, Garrett Crochet and Dylan Cease? But neither of them were in the starting rotation together. But now this time they will be. I got Dylan Cease going to the Boston Red Sox before the deadline, Jim.
And then they can trade for Hauser and Savali and just have an all White Sox rotation. Yes. Stretch out Liam Hendricks back to the his original role, right? So,
oh, man.
Although Hendricks is out, but yeah, maybe. Reinvent Hendricks as a lefty.
I mean, the Red Sox are only, what, a game back of the Yankees right now. The Red Sox would be the fifth seed if the season were to end today. They're a half game ahead of Seattle and Texas. So, Boston, like, I could see, could they trade Duran to San Diego for Cease? I don't know. I don't know how that would work, but I
think, like, San Diego would want that, but
yeah, I know San Diego would want that, but I don't have a good feeling of what San Diego wants to do. The fact that they're floating Dylan Cease out there, I'm wondering if they're going to trade Dylan Cease for immediate outfield help. Boston can provide that. So yeah, that's my hot take before the deadline. Dylan Cease does get traded, but to Boston.
I don't get to, or like, I'm looking forward to, in a kind of cringy way, of Dylan Cease's free agency. Like, I could see either he gets like a pillow contract and Boris kind of settles for that right away, and maybe that's like how he goes. But if he tries to hold out for, like, he's a top five Cy Young finisher twice over, and then like the years in between aren't so great, like, I could see his free agency being a little bit messy, or just ending up in one of those very those contracts with the guaranteed money, or like the, this has a max value of this, but only if he doesn't opt out here, here, and here. Or yeah, I could see that being the case.
Like a UC Kikuchi type of deal, or yeah.
I just don't see how they can afford the shed pitching. Like, they lost Michael King for a long period of time. They're running, like, Yu Darvish is quite old and looking shaky. They're running out Randy Vasquez regularly, which, want to have a good time, look up his peripherals. Very insane. Like, Cease has been weird in like 2023 over there, but I also, like, do they have a plan to add a starter or two in replace of him? It just seems like a standard wacky Padres concept that you can't really see working in real life. And they obviously pull off an inordinate amount of those.
Right.
I don't want to bet on a specific one because it just doesn't make sense to my eyes.
It's the Padres. I can't make heads or tails right now. of what the Padres want to do. They're a game ahead of Cincinnati for one of the final spots.
Corey Lee in our list of trade deadline. You know, they was linked to the Padres.
Sure.
Because they have Martin Maldonado.
Yeah. The Reds are catching on fire. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They've won 4 straight games. They're a game back to the Padres. Maybe the Reds are buyers.
I guess like Lee makes sense that they keep Maldonado because aren't they attached to the hip at every single stop? Astros and the White Sox and Padres. Corey Lee and Maldonado have been the tandem or a tandem at times. Corey Lee, the Padres has to happen.
That seems a lot like doing the ritual that like the cursed book, like tells you not to do, but also gives the instructions.
Well, we'll see if there's going to be any surprise buyers. I don't see a lot of surprise buyers in the American League. I just don't. National League, I could see things getting weird. A little bit goofy.
The surprise is the Lugo extension, I guess, in a way. Like that's the surprise staying, I guess.
Yeah, it'd be hard for me to imagine Kansas City right now feeling like we can make up 4 games and we can get ourselves into the playoffs. But I could also see their perspective of we don't want to sell 2026. And we feel like Seth Lugo could still help us be a competitive team in 2026. So I guess I could see from their perspective and why they did not trade Seth Lugo.
I do not think, having also worked on their system, I don't think they can easily absorb the loss of Seth Lugo and build a rotation next year.
After all those college pitchers they drafted, none of them are going to pan out.
Cameron's good.
Yeah, and Bubic is on the IL.
Right.
That's another guy that is not available. But I wasn't high on Bubic being dealt before the deadline. Yeah. The fun one's going to be Suarez and Dylan Cease to Boston. Let's make that happen. And again, we'll capture all the breaking news and all the big headlines leading up to the trade deadline on SoxMachine.com. Now we're going to shift gears as the Charlotte Knights were in Nashville this past week. And of course, Jim being in Nashville gives Jim an opportunity to visit the Knights. He wrote an awesome feature story, if you didn't get a chance to read it, on SoxMachine.com about Sergio Santos, the manager of the Charlotte Knights, and the art of breaking news to players that they're getting called up to the majors. I strongly recommend reading that feature. It was great work by you, Jim, and it was great to see that video from 2010 when Sergio Santos got his call up during the documentary on MLB Network. But Jim, what was interesting tagging along with the Charlotte Knights in Nashville this week?
Not a whole lot, just because the amount of familiar faces are already on the roster, all the players who have been, you know, cleared waivers or somehow come back to them. Like, everybody's familiar. Brian Ramos is, you know, still kind of running in place as a, you know, middling AAA third baseman. Made some nice plays in the field. Like, I still think he's a real third baseman if he could just hit righties once in a while, because they don't face lefties really in Charlotte right now. Noah Syndergaard did not have much. I think they're still going to give him a couple more starts, see if like he can get more velocity. But right now, like, he looks a lot like last year's, both in terms of like pitch mix and velocity. And just, I think get by in the minors when you can throw 5 pitches for strikes, but in the majors, that's not so special. And he got, you know, cut from 2 organizations last year because it just didn't work. So not a whole lot there. Jacob Gonzalez coming up for the last 2 games. That was interesting. Talk to him a little bit. He feels like he's spent like 180 games in Birmingham, so he's ready. You know, didn't feel like he's very even keel demeanor when it comes to talking to him. So he's not going to like light up the organization for saying this should have happened months ago, but he's comfortable with the player he is in terms of the approach he has. I'm looking forward to seeing how it works in a more hitter-friendly ballpark. Right now, the entire Southern League is not hitting. Like, he somehow has the second highest slugging percentage and the highest ISO on the team among Birmingham regulars, even though, like, you wouldn't say he's hitting for power. Like, nobody hits for power in Birmingham. Like slugging across the Southern League is down. So I'm curious to see how his approach, does it somehow show more power in AAA than AA, or does it kind of collapse against better pitching or more advanced pitching? Like, don't know. Noah Schultz, kind of an open-ended knee situation right now, but Sergio told me like 3 to 4 weeks is their expectation. He was in the dugout. Hard guy to miss when he's in the dugout, being 6'10". So like, didn't see him the first day. And so I thought, oh, maybe he's not around. And then saw him every day after. So probably a good sign he's in Charlotte versus in Arizona or Chicago. Just more a matter of waiting that out.
Still 3 to 4 weeks though, from right now before Schultz pitches.
Or when he went on the injured list. So I think he said 3 to 4 weeks is the expectation. So I imagine sometime in second half of August would be like based on what they said, but I guess we'll find out as that draws closer. Yeah, Will Robertson looked good. Like in terms of if they traded Talkman, that'd be a case of like, yeah, give him some at bats, see what he does with them. But if he doesn't trade Talkman, like that's probably, bats might be harder to come by a little bit, but he looks like he's doing what he needs to do to remain interesting. Otherwise, Peyton Platt hadn't pitched all week, but then he did. He's throwing his curveball more. Iriarte, his stuff looks better. Just a matter of talk to pitching coach Scott Aldred. Just seemed like he slipped into some bad habits. His arm swing got longer. They're trying to cut down his arm swing, and that was getting longer on him. So, just nobody really demanding a promotion to the White Sox, but there's your update.
All right. Fantastic. It'd be great if Noah Schultz was pitching a little bit more. Are we going to see, I guess if Schultz doesn't bounce back and Hagen Smith hasn't thrown enough innings this year, could one or both be pitching the Arizona Fall League this fall, James?
Smith, Giannis talking to him this weekend said like, you're very like not committing to it, but that's a possibility for him, and that there wouldn't be too big of a layoff between the end of the AA season and the start of it, where it could line up, and he's only at 40 innings. So I think, yeah, for that, I think it's harder to project for Schultz while he's currently on the IL, and it's all about like, how does he look? How does he recover from the knee injury? Like, if it's hard to peg in like Smith in right now, it's doubly hard for Schultz, but.
Got it.
So I would put a Smith as like someone they're overtly talking about, like, yeah, maybe. And Schultz is like, I will see.
It's going to be kind of a bummer because at the beginning of the part of this season, I was hopeful that both Schultz and Smith would have been lighting the world on fire. We could have seen him in September and that one inning out of bullpen, give him a little taste of pitching in the major leagues. Could they help out in the rotation starting in 2026? Maybe that could still be the plan later in 2026, but it's kind of harder to envision right now, like putting them in pen. Hey, they're going to be in the starting rotation in 2026 on opening day. Doesn't seem likely for either Schultz or Smith at this moment. And then finally, for the White Sox to conclude this homestand before the trade deadline, after the trade deadline, the White Sox have a West Coast trip. They'll be visiting Anaheim and Seattle to start the month of August. The Chicago White Sox host the Philadelphia Phillies. And what great timing, as Dick Gallen finally had his day at the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. One of our Veterans Committee supporters, Pete, he was at the Hall of Fame weekend, and he's sharing great pictures from Cooperstown in the group chat. So, Pete, thank you so much. The Phillies are 60-45 this year. They're one game back of the New York Mets in the National League East. If the season were to end today, the Phillies would be the fifth seed in the National League postseason. They lost on Sunday against the New York Yankees, but in their last 10 games, they're 6-4. The Phillies are above 500 on the road. They're 27-26. Offensively, the Phillies generate a lot more runs at home than on the road. They average 4.7 runs per game for the season, but on the road, that does dip down to 4.28. The team OPS is noticeable. For the season, the Phillies ranked 7th in Major League Baseball with a team OPS of 741. But away from Philadelphia, their team OPS is 702. That's 16th in Major League Baseball. On the pitching side, the starters for the Phillies, excellent as always. Dave Dombrowski has done a very good job building up a starting rotation. They have a staff ERA of 3.43 for the starters. That's good for fifth in Major League Baseball. The bullpen could use some work. The reliever ERA for the Phillies this year is 4.25. That's 21st in Major League Baseball. But while I point out to the Phillies, maybe not as powerful or dynamic offensively on the road, their pitching staff away from Philadelphia, a 3.39 ERA, both starters and relievers. That is the best in Major League Baseball. So the Phillies are the best pitching team on the road this season. So we'll see if that impacts the White Sox offensive abilities. It's going to be a tough matchup for the White Sox, even though they do face two lefties out of the gate. On Monday night at 6:40 p.m. Central Time, it's Christopher Sanchez for the Phillies, who's been excellent this year against the dart, Davis Martin. Tuesday night, 6:40 p.m. Central Time, Jesus Luzardo takes the ball for the Phillies against Jonathan Cannon. And then Wednesday, getaway day at 1:10 p.m. Central Time, it's Taiwan Walker for the Phillies. And right now we'll put it to be announced for the White Sox or to be determined. If you go to MLB.com, it's Adrian Hauser. But James, very not likely at all, right? We've had this conversation.
It is their probable starter.
I know it's their probable starter, but it doesn't. They would skip that start, right? If they're having serious conversations, and if it does look like Hauser could be dealt, even if it's on Thursday, they'll skip his start.
Sure, I mean, like any person that you trade, you'd pull him. I don't think I think it's a standard leverage tactic by teams that just kind of continue with normal operations up until the point they're halted. I know people are going to freak out if he starts pitching on Wednesday and view it as unacceptable level of risk to have him do his job. But we don't see teams operate this way. They pull when a deal is close or it's, effectively in principle done or close enough where they risk and they operate as if normal, if not. And if a team wants to, I think you should push that risk onto a team. If you don't want him getting hurt, pitching for someone else, and view as you can help them, you can pay for that. So I think teams tend to push that risk onto one another and not take it on. We're afraid if we put this guy out here, chaos is going to ensue. It's also just it's not the stakes. It's not Garrett Crochet. It's a number four starter on a playoff team. It's not we can't break this priceless Fabergé egg. It's the risk you take taking your car out of the driveway in America every day. I don't know, you got to live your life at some point. So yeah, more likely because there's a market for him. I don't think that start happens just because if you really want to add Hauser, why do you let him start the day before the deadline? But I also don't think it's this can't happen if it does either.
The two games for the White Sox offensively, Jim, against left-handed starters, the White Sox have been hitting lefties better as of late. But I mean, Christopher Sanchez in his last seven starts, a 1.40 ERA, 51 strikeouts to just four walks. So the White Sox hitters better be ready to hit, and they've been jumping all over the fastball. In Sanchez's last start, he threw a complete game, 9 innings, 12 strikeouts, no walks, only allowed one earned run in the win against the Boston Red Sox. Even though these are lefties and Sanchez and Luzardo, this could be a tough series offensively for the White Sox. So again, this could be a good barometer series to see if the adjustments the White Sox have made offensively are sticking.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it before, with the going from the Pirates to the Rays, the Cubs, this ascending level of degree of difficulty. And I think the Phillies would be one step more in terms of real stuff that they're throwing at you. And is it a matter of exploiting either bad teams or teams that are underinvested in taking it to the White Sox versus the Phillies, who have very real things to play for right now, in a real dogfight with the Mets for the top spot. Fascinated by the Phillies, by the way, they just have a lot of stuff going on, a good Dave Dombrowski team of just real strengths, real weaknesses, real things they're forfeiting in order to get edges elsewhere. A lot of veterans, name brand talent, and egos and such. Like, their outfield is kind of a mess in terms of how are the Phillies this good? And you look at their outfield, and like, everybody is below replacement level because of either their offense or their defense dragging them down. I wonder if like Luis Robert Jr. is just going to run to the Phillies dugout at one point, just mid game. Like, you're going there now. Like, that's seems like could be feasible if he's healthy enough to run to a dugout. Like, if he doesn't pull his groin running to the dugout. But they just signed David Robertson, which is fascinating. Like, they
old friend,
yeah,
David Robertson.
Like, not, you know, just Robertson is basically saying tanned, rested, and ready, waiting for a team to add him that needs him.
What a gig.
Yeah,
missed, I mean, the like, first half. Okay.
Yeah, and just he represents himself. Like, he doesn't pay an agent cut to sign his own deals halfway through. It's just like he gets all them, like, fascinating guy, fascinating existence that he has in baseball right now, that he's able to carve out this niche of just storing glass in case of emergency. And the Phillies signed him for like $16 million or like $6 million prorated or something like that. But it's
he's getting $6 million.
Yeah. So like, curious to see how he looks. Like, a lot of fascinating stuff going on. So I always enjoy when the White Sox play the Phillies just to see how these things work.
Wow. Okay. Good job, David Robertson. I forgot that he represented himself. He doesn't pitch the first half at all. He hosts a showcase and he gets $6 million coming off the street. All right. I hope he's
him
good.
And Roger Clemens. That was basically like their deals.
I think the 15-year track record probably helps a little bit more than the showcase in a vacuum.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, on the power side, only Kyle Schwarber has hit more than 20 homers this year. Bryce Harper, playing primarily first base for the Phillies, is at 15 homers. He's got 22 doubles. But Schwarber, 36 home run. Yeah, Jonathan Cannon, you're going to have to figure something out. All right, against Kyle Schwarber. Like, that's the matchup for the White Sox pitching. I am not looking forward to. Let's see if the White Sox righties can keep Schwarber in the yard. But we'll be recapping that series between the White Sox and Phillies in our next podcast episode, which could be a quite loaded show, depending to see on how active the White Sox are prior to the trade deadline. But that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also listen and watch the show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sox Machine. We also post up other videos as well. I just recently did a beer review. Gene Honda's got a beer. So you can go to the Remova Theater and pick up his beer. You go to Wright Field for the White Sox Phillies games to the Craft Cave, and you can have the Gene Honda beer. Lots of pictures over the weekend. They sold over 100 cases of that Gene Honda beer. So it's been a pretty big hit early on at the White Sox Stadium. But you can check out that video on our YouTube channel. You can follow us on social media or on all the platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow James at JR Fegan. You can follow me at Sox_Machine_Josh. We're also on Blue Sky at SoxMachine.com. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, especially with the trade deadline coming up, you can sign up to become a subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. I get to the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website. We also have some spots open in our Veterans Committee. So if you want to join the VC and be part of the group chat with direct access to James as he shares his insight from the White Sox clubhouse and what is going on leading up to the MLB trade deadline, we do have a couple spots open. You can acquire, again, at SoxMachine.com. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com, your home for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.